Don't Move a Muscle, the podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I'm your host, Cassie.
And I'm Joe.
And we're here to do Chapter 7 of Prisoner of Azkaban, The Boggart in the Wardrobe. And... we're not going to dig into it in full detail before the chapter summary, but I do want to ask, do you think that this chapter title is a Narnia reference?
I watched the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe movie, but
okay.
I didn't read the books.
Well, that's enough to get it. So the second book in the Narnia series is The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
And this is The Boggart in the Wardrobe.
Yes.
I don't know.
Okay.
They both happen in a wardrobe.
All right. Galadriel, author of The Ultimate Unofficial Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter, suggested that this might be a Narnia reference. I don't think it is. I think it's just about a boggart in a wardrobe.
Yeah. Especially like they talk about it could be anywhere. It has nothing to do with them like traveling to different places.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to see how you feel about it. So we always start off our chapter discussions with a chapter summary. This week, it is Joe's turn to do the chapter summary in 30 seconds or less. Let me get my phone for the timer. All right, whenever you're ready.
Malfoy is milking his injury to get Harry to get Hagrid fired and to make Harry and Ron do menial tasks for him in potions class. Snape bullies Neville and tries to poison his toad. Then, for defense against the dark arts, Lupin has Neville and most of the class fight a Boggart, but he stops Harry and Hermione from fighting it.
All right. That was like 16 seconds. Pretty good. We're going to have to talk about Boggart versus Boggart.
Yeah.
I say Boggart.
Boggart? Yeah. I feel like I say Boggart.
Okay. I think both can be right.
I'm sure there's like one actual spelling.
We should maybe check the
our movie. Pronunciation.
Yeah. I think it's Boggart.
Is the movie the way to go with like... how things should be said? And
I think, at least for pronunciation, I feel like we can rely on the movie. I don't remember any particular ones that they've really messed up.
Okay.
Well, it doesn't matter. We're recording.
It's too late now.
You can say it however you want.
I feel like bogarting something is an actual thing.
It is. Boggartings. I don't know. Actually, now you're making me doubt it. Whatever. We'll just wait for the email from one of our listeners correcting us. So
doing anything to get emails.
Oh,
I'll pronounce everything wrong.
Don't
in
even
order
get me
to...
started on emails. I have had so many problems with emails today. Like not even just our email. Like all of my email accounts seem to have broken today.
Oh, good.
Yeah, which is great. And I finally figured out like 10 minutes before we hit record, it was because. Surprise, we're recording this on March 14th, which Daylight Savings happened last night. And so because my computer clock had not updated to the correct time, email just broke. It was like, hey, I'm not going to work anymore because I have no idea what time it is.
That seems irrelevant to how emails work.
I know. And so I've spent all of this time like deleting accounts and re-adding accounts for my Outlook clients and like sending test emails. I even opened up a ticket with our web server being like, hey, email is broken. But so far, since I adjusted the time on my computer, it seems to be better.
I have never manually adjusted the time on a clock.
On
my computer clock.
Usually it syncs with
the internet.
Yeah, with a web server. So I just had to hit the button that said, hey, please sync this now. You think it would do that automatically, but I guess it didn't.
Huh. Okay.
All right. Well, back to Harry Potter.
I hope you enjoyed that thrilling tangent.
I've spent a lot of time stressed out about emails in the last few hours. So anyway, yeah, this chapter, 16 seconds for a chapter summary is not that much. Do you feel like this was like a good meaty chapter? I don't know how I feel about this chapter.
I like this chapter.
Okay.
It seemed to be heavily centered on Neville, which was fun.
I don't know if I agree with that. All right, whatever. Let's just talk about it. So they open up in potions class.
Yes.
And they're working on shrinking solutions, which, as the name suggests, can cause the drinker to shrink into a smaller form. And if you recall, in the first chapter of this book, Harry had to write an essay about shrinking solutions over the summer.
So he's been studying up on drinking solutions. He's prepared.
Uh-huh.
Now, you would think that drinking solutions means you're going to just be you, but smaller. But
no,
this is we're going to revert you back in time.
Yeah.
To a younger version of you when you were smaller.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying. So, like, theoretically, if you had a shrinking solution dumped all over you, you would turn into a baby?
It seems like you have to drink it.
Okay. Still.
But the aging one, the one that Snape uses to, like, the anti-shrinking solution.
Snape tests Neville's on Neville's pet toad, Trevor, and Trevor turns into a tadpole, which raises a lot of questions.
Why?
Why does it turn back into its baby form?
That's just what
I would just think that a shrinking solution would make it smaller.
That's what you think, but that's
what the description too says.
Snape specifically says that that's what's going to happen.
But a tadpole,
he knows that. Yeah.
A tadpole is not a small version of a frog.
Yeah, it's the young.
It's a baby version.
Yeah, it's a baby version.
So you're saying that if you dumped this on a human or a human drank it, would they turn into a baby or would they turn into just a miniature version of themselves?
It depends how strong it is.
Does Neville make a really powerful version of it that can send Trevor back in its evolutionary timeline?
No, Cassie. If it was strong enough, maybe you'd become a baby. But if you gave this like a really old person, maybe they would just age down a few years.
But shrinking solutions turn the drinker into a smaller form of themselves.
Form, you know, like you as a child.
A baby is not a smaller form of a human. It's the baby version.
Yeah.
I was really freaked out that Trevor turned into a tadpole. I thought it was just going to be a smaller Trevor.
I was hoping for a tiny Trevor, but I'm okay with tadpole Trevor.
All right, let's talk about shrinking solutions. The potion has appeared in a few of the video games. It was in the online version of Pottermore before Pottermore was destroyed. It was in Half-Blood Prince on, I think, the Xbox 360. I watched a video of somebody brewing the shrinking solution. And it was in Wonderbook Book of Potions, which, if you don't know, Wonderbook was like a pretty ambitious project for the Harry Potter series. They partnered with PlayStation to use the PlayStation Move controllers. And I think they had an integration with PlayStation Home as well, where you would use the Move controllers, which for most people, just think of a Wiimote and think of
like
a worse version. Yeah, an orb at the end. And also nobody bought it. So you would use the Move controller as like your wand or all kinds of different things for
the
Wonderbook stuff.
Or I guess the spoon for your cauldron.
Yeah, that was one of the applications. I watched a lot of videos of people playing Wonderbook Book of Potions to do my research. So it was in Wonderbook Book of Potions. Each of these different appearances of shrinking solutions in the video games have slightly different like interactions that the player must complete before successfully brewing the potion. And that makes sense. You know, the things that you can do with an Xbox 360 controller are different than what you would do with like a motion controller. But it changes the recipe for shrinking solutions in the different video games.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a weird thing.
I mean, that's kind of going back to the time when they had different teams working on different versions of games.
But we do get a pretty good narration of what the recipe is in this book here. So, like, I feel like there is, like, a canonical, this is the shrinking solution recipe.
At least part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's an interesting thing. I do want to give a shout out to Gadget Girl Kylie on YouTube, who did, like, a huge playthrough of all of the Wonderbook Book of Potions and I think the other Wonderbook games, too. Very, very helpful because those are kind of vaporware at this point.
Okay. How many years ago was this? Are we shouting out a very dead YouTube channel?
Her videos were posted in 2014, but I think she's still actively like posting things.
Okay.
That's recent to me.
Yeah. 2014.
I'm not old.
Most of my current students were born that year.
Oh, God. Stop. Okay. Other things about shrinking solutions. Per Wonderbook Book of Potions, which does go into some of the background of shrinking solutions, a wizard once dumped shrinking solution into a village well after he had been persecuted by the village, and he then chased the shrunken villagers around to stomp on them.
So that didn't turn them into babies,
no,
then.
This is my problem.
It seems like there's
this
just some
emails.
Inconsistency.
Yeah, it's inconsistent. Okay, and then the other story about shrinking solutions from Wonderbook was that the same guy also accidentally used shrinking potion on the grass and caused a flock of sheep to shrink down to the size of mice. And then he used the small sheep as ear warmers when it was cold out.
Like earmuffs?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't like that.
Where is this information coming
from? Wonder Book Book of Potions.
Wonder Book Book of Potions. Okay.
Which, to my knowledge, Rowling was fairly involved in. It's a very strange thing.
This is such a large amount of information for something that is,
I know,
never touched again.
Well, it will be if you play the Half-Blood Prince video game.
That's true. Strangely enough, it's not in Half-Blood Prince, though.
I know. Yeah, I really got stuck on shrinking solutions today.
It almost seems like the video game developers were like, we got to get this out alongside the books or movies. We're not actually going to pay attention to what's in this current one. We're going to get a general idea.
Yeah, I mean, the video games are a wildscape of reinterpretation, let's say.
They're the alternate reality Harry Potter stuff.
Yeah, it's very strange. Another story about shrinking solutions, by the way, which I believe is also from Wonder Book Book of Potions, is that shrinking solutions may be used to make transporting livestock easier.
Okay.
But also maybe you can live forever with a shrinking solution if you just keep getting turned back into the baby version of yourself. I'm so upset by this.
Well, I'm going to go off of what we have in our actual book.
Mm-hmm. The baby thing. The complicated thing.
I don't know.
If it was just a small version of yourself, it would be like, okay, fine, let's move on. But the baby thing is deeply concerning.
It's a smaller form.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Trevor was smaller then.
We need to move on.
He's been the same size for a long time.
A small Trevor is not a tadpole. I feel like a crazy person.
But if you look at a picture of when you were like six, that's a small you.
Yeah, but if there was a machine that scientists invented and they said, step into this machine and you'll be a smaller version of yourself, I would want to be like a version of myself that you could like put in your pocket, you know, like tiny Hermione, if you will. The Hark of Vagrant comic.
You better like read the fine print and not just hop into a machine because they said you'll be small.
If it turned me into a baby version of myself.
I mean, you'd cry a lot, but I don't know if you'd know to be pissed.
All right. Okay. So that's shrinking solutions and the latest horrifying things in the Harry Potter universe.
I feel like when a company does buy the Harry Potter universe so that they can make new stuff in the same way that Disney did with Star Wars.
Oh, like they wrest control from their horrible creator.
Yeah, the video games are going to be some of the like Legends stuff that they just ignore.
Let me tell you about a Harry Potter video game that may be coming out this year. That's a whole other story that I don't want to get into, but it involves, by the way, the like lead, God, I don't even remember what his title was. Like one of the high up producers of this video game is like a former gamer gator and has an active YouTube channel in which he attacks women in video game spaces. Yep. And Warner Brothers was like, yeah, we had no problem with this when we hired him.
Yep.
I'm really all right. Let's talk about the parts of Harry Potter that we do like. Malfoy is a little punk.
Yeah,
in
Malfoy,
this chapter.
The part that we really love. Malfoy.
I mean, I love to hate Malfoy.
He is faking an injury. Madame Pomfrey has already declared that he is fine.
Yes, but he waltzes into class late, being like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm in so much pain. And he openly admits to Harry and Ron that he is putting on this show to get Hagrid fired and to get special treatment.
Yes, but he whispers that. Like, Snape's not going to believe them.
The level of entitlement is just off the charts here.
I mean, they know. He's just happy to rub it in their face. He didn't, like, drop a bombshell on them.
The fact that he says it, like, he goes on Maine and he's like, yeah, this is what I'm doing, is so much more malicious to me than if he was just putting on a show and not really like acknowledging that that's what he's doing. He's acknowledging that he has a motive here. Whereas like, not to keep comparing to the movie, but like in the movie, he never says that this is what he's doing. It just seems like he's being a dramatic little crybaby. And so we know Malfoy. We know that he's being a dramatic little crybaby in order to achieve some kind of end, i.e. get Hagrid fired.
Mm-hmm.
But you can at least make an argument in that situation that he is just really dramatic. But that he comes out and says it. Book Malfoy is so much worse than fanon Malfoy and movie Malfoy.
Well, one of those is a fictional version of fiction.
Yeah.
He's set up to be someone to hate.
Yeah. It just, I really just hated him in this chapter.
Just as hard as possible.
Yeah. He also says that.
But Snape is on another level, too.
Oh, we'll get to Snape. Malfoy also says, though, that his father has a lot of influence with the school governors and the Ministry of Magic, which we've known.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't Dumbledore expose Lucius last year? Like, maybe not for the diary thing, because I can see that being a far stretch. But Dumbledore says, like, Lucius threatened the other school governors to get Dumbledore removed.
Mm-hmm.
Why is Lucius allowed to continue threatening the school governors?
Wasn't he a school governor at some point?
He was. I thought he was removed.
He was removed. I think that was the only consequence he got, but he still has all that influence.
The influence meaning the power to threaten the other school governors. Why is Dumbledore not stopping him?
That's politics. Dumbledore isn't.
Oh my God.
Dumbledore doesn't deal with politics.
There are a lot of holes in this chapter gaping holes that we must walk and jump around.
I mean, think about he is a rich man from a wealthy family who has had power his whole life, will continue to have power.
Sure.
That minor punishment was as much as he was going to get. There was nothing that Dumbledore could have done to strip that from him.
I mean, came out and said Lucius threatened the other school governors.
The other school governors could have said that too.
Yeah.
But
they just allow Malfoy, as in Lucius Malfoy, to continue his reign of terror over the school board?
Yes.
Okay, great. On to other things that bothered me. Snape. Snape is really bad in this chapter. Another character who has been woobified by Fanon, and I would argue the movies too. He is a monster in this chapter.
Yes, 100%. The biggest thing is, in the movies, he's cast so well.
Okay. Yes, Alan Rickman is a good actor.
Alan Rickman is
that doesn't mean
is a
Snape
good
is not a monster.
He's a good actor, and I love him.
Do you? What have you seen him in other than the Harry Potter movies?
That's all that matters.
Actually, is he in Love Actually?
Have I seen Love Actually?
I feel like we've brought up Love Actually several times before, and you've never suggested to me that you haven't seen Love Actually.
Have you seen Love Actually?
Yes. All right. So Snape is terrible in this chapter.
Snape is awful in this chapter. He is bullying Neville.
Yeah.
Who is a struggling student. He's just like, I said this, I said that.
Were you not listening?
Just
how do we penetrate that thick skull of yours, Longbottom?
I know this is going to fail. So I'm going to poison your frog.
Yes. So he berates Neville publicly in front of the entire class to the point where Neville cries. He does not allow Neville to accept help from Hermione. Like, he specifically says, Hermione can't help you. And
I don't remember
going to
asking you to show off, Miss Granger.
Yeah, which is mean, too. And he is like, you better fix that potion, Longbottom, because we're going to test it on your toad. And I don't know what's going to happen. And the implication here to me is that Snape was prepared to poison Trevor as punishment for Neville messing up his potion.
Yes.
Was Snape prepared to unpoison Trevor, or was Snape going to kill Neville's toad to teach Neville some kind of lesson?
I would say he definitely had an antidote.
This is deranged behavior.
But with so many variables, I don't see how Snape could have had an antidote for every possible poison.
Exactly. I understand people's arguments for why it's okay that Snape bullies Harry. I don't agree with them, but I think that there's some nuance to that conversation. There is absolutely no excuse for the way Snape treats Neville and Hermione, but Neville is really the worst here.
Yeah. He's struggling.
Yeah.
In this class.
And I'm not saying that Snape needs to like pick him up and give him a kiss on the forehead and be like, it's okay, baby, we'll fix it. But like, I mean, that would be deeply inappropriate too for a teacher to do. But like, he doesn't have to berate Neville in front of the entire class completely unprovoked. Not to say that a teacher should berate their students when they're provoked either. But like, I am horrified that Snape is allowed to continue being a teacher here at Hogwarts. When this is, as we've understood, kind of how he treats all Gryffindors. Neville seems to be a particularly bad case because Neville is not a great student, at least in potions class. Mm-hmm. But this is beyond the pale. This is really bad.
It's very extreme. Yeah, I don't appreciate how he's treating him. And he continues to do so throughout the chapter. He comes back into the scene when Lupin takes them into the teacher's lounge in order, and like he leaves, and as he's walking out the door, he's trying to say,
he sneaks in another like snide little comment about Neville.
Yeah, he, you know, Neville's a mess. You know, Neville's in your class, this is going to be a problem. Like, he's going to mess things up.
Ugh.
Don't ask him to do anything challenging.
Ugh. And we'll talk about that scene in more detail. But I really was upset by the way Snape was treating Neville here. So potions class ends. Hermione helps Neville fix the shrinking solution, and it turns out okay. As we said, Trevor turns into a tadpole, which we're just going to move right past. And
I'm acknowledging it. That's a smaller form.
And
the inconsistency comes from the PlayStation Move game.
Mm-hmm. Call it by its name, Joe. Wonder Book, Book of Potions.
Okay.
Wonder Book, colon, Book of Potions. So they are leaving potions class. Hermione.
Oh, but
is...
don't forget that after Neville gets it right, because Snape is saying, if he does this, if he's done this wrong, as I expect he has, it will most likely poison Trevor.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes out right. Gryffindor cheers. And then he takes away 5 points from Gryffindor because clearly Hermione helped him. Which is true.
Which Snape told her not to do.
Yes.
Hermione was trying to save an innocent toad here.
Unacceptable. Snape's word is law in Snape's class.
Apparently, there's no overseeing body that prevents a teacher from abusing their students. Maybe Lucius threatened the school governors to keep Snape there, too. I don't know. Regardless, it's bad. They leave potions class and they're all kind of walking and fuming about what happened. Harry and Ron turn around to talk to Hermione, who has disappeared and then reappears at the top of the steps, shoving something into her robes. It's a detail for us to point out. I don't think we can have any kind of educated conversation about it without spoiling what it is all about.
Yeah, not yet. But she has books for a lot of classes that she's not supposed to be taking today.
Yeah, and Ron points that out. And Hermione does not play it off well. I feel like she could just say, oh, I'm planning to go to the library and study later. And I didn't want to have to go pick up my books.
Yeah.
Hermione's
Although
not good at lying.
They're going to be with her all day. So that's not true.
I mean, but she could just go to the library later.
Theoretically.
Like, that excuse can check out. Hermione was probably planning to go to the library anyway.
But yes, she doesn't play this off well. She makes it as obvious as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't very nice about it either.
No, she's not. I mean, she's flustered.
Yeah, she's overwhelmed. There's a lot going on right now.
Yeah. I like to imagine that, like, the more overwhelmed Hermione gets, the bigger her hair gets.
Yep.
That's just the image I have in my head. So they also go to Defense Against the Dark Arts class, and the book reads that Lupin was as shabby as ever, but looked healthier than he had on the train, as though he had had a few square meals.
As to say that, like, he was skin and bones earlier and had not eaten for a long time.
There's a real, like, homeless vibe coming off of Lupin here.
Yeah.
I'm concerned about him.
It's okay now. He's in Hogwarts. It's okay now.
Yeah. And Lupin announces that they will be having a practical Defense Against the Dark Arts lesson, not learning out of their books. And all of the kids are like, what?
We haven't had this since we fought pixies.
Yeah. These kids have been deprived of, like, proper education. So Lupin announces this and he leads them on a little journey to the teacher's lounge. And on the way, they encounter Peeves. And what is Peeves doing, Joe?
Peeves is shoving gum into a lock of the broom closet.
He is, to anger Filch, the caretaker, who, let's not forget, is a squib. He cannot use magic. This would be an easy fix for anybody with magic, but they are deliberately trying to make Filch's life harder.
Yes, Peeves is a menace.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, as he sees Lupin coming over, he calls him Loony Loopy Lupin.
Yes. Lupin uses a spell to shoot gum out of the keyhole into Peeves' nose.
How would you pronounce it?
Wadi Wasi.
Okay. We're on the same page.
Okay. A little bit about Wadi Wasi. In Hogwarts Mystery, the mobile game, which I do not play because, one, because I hate J.K. Rowling, and two, because it's real scummy. It's one of those like, ooh, buy your recharges, get the gems, that kind of thing. Students use the spell while dueling to shoot gum at their opponent. And to break down the name a little bit, wad isn't too hard. It's a wad of gum. Yeah. And this was from both the Harry Potter wiki and the lexicon back to this up. Vasy, V-A-S-Y, is a French term meaning go ahead. So go ahead, wad, you know, sending the wad somewhere else, I guess, is the breakdown of that.
Sure.
But the lexicon had an interesting note that a user speculated on that I thought made that make more sense to me. The useful spell that Lupin was showing them was undoubtedly the Wasi part, in this case with a target word attached, wad. Again, we see how important intention is to magic, since the wad was directed into Peeves's nose by intent with the go there part of the spell. In another situation, the spell might be Stola Wasi to send a robe into a student's trunk, but it would only work if the student focused his mind on where he wanted the robe to go. So I thought that was interesting just in that the construction of the names of spells can sort of be mixed and matched in a way, as if the Wasi part is just the incantation.
Actual spell, and then you're right. Deciding what you're moving.
Right. And we'll see this with a different spell that'll come up in Goblet of Fire, that this spell has a target, but it's stated in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting note in breaking it down and kind of speculating on the possibilities of magic within the Harry Potter universe.
Yeah, it's a shame that we're only going to be seeing higher level, like different spells as nonverbal, of like we won't hear anyone use the spell differently, but we'll see the action happen.
Sure. And unfortunately, it wasn't in Wonder Book Book of Spells, so we have no information about it. All right.
You didn't get to flick gum using your move controller?
No, that technology hasn't gotten us there yet. So they get to the faculty room after this encounter with Peeves, and Snape is there, as Joe alluded to earlier. And he leaves as the students enter, saying that he'd rather not witness the lesson. And he makes a snide comment about Neville right after that. So presumably he's saying that he would rather not witness the horror that Neville is about to wreak on the Boggart. But
also just like, I don't want to see this at all. Which, to an extent, I'm perfectly fine with. He was in the teacher's lounge.
Okay.
You know, he doesn't need to watch another teacher's class.
Like I do during my off periods because I share my classroom with another teacher. So I actually thought that I didn't think of that, but I thought another interesting nuance about this is that, do you think Snape is bitter about seeing Lupin teach Defense Against the Dark Arts? Because we know Snape wants that job. So for Snape to sit there and watch someone else teach Defense Against the Dark Arts, I thought that that might be upsetting for him. And that might be his motive for leaving.
There are more things that we'll be able to talk about later on as to potential motivators for him to leave. But in general, it doesn't seem like Snape wants to be around students unless he's berating them. And I feel like Lupin probably would have kicked him out if he was just standing there berating students during Lupin's class.
Or at least like nicely gotten him to stop. Because I did notice the contrast between how Snape talks to his students in the potions lesson and how Lupin talks to his students. He says things like, would you kindly do this? Or like, I didn't mean for that to sound like a Bioshock thing, but he says like, when he gives them homework, he says, kindly read the chapter on Boggarts and write a summary for Monday's class. And like pleases and thank yous and just sort of inviting the students to share that space and build a sense of community with him.
And he also knew a lot about the students, which seemed nice until I realized this was his first day teaching. So like he didn't get this information from talking to these students. Where did he find out that Neville lives with his grandmother?
Right. So that was something that I was reading about I think Galadriel might have noted this in her write up of the chapter that she wrote that either indicates that Neville is from a pretty well known family and people know the circumstances of Neville living with his grandmother, mm-hmm. which we'll learn about in a future book, and I think is probably the case, or that Lupin might know the Longbottoms in some way.
Yes.
Yeah, which I think both actually could be the case.
Yes, and we know one is the case.
Yeah. Well, we kind of know both, too.
Yeah.
Another thing, too, though, about Snape's interaction here with Lupin, Snape calls Lupin, Lupin. And I thought this was interesting because I thought back in my head to how do the teachers refer to each other in front of students?
We had in the beginning, when they first arrived at Hogwarts.
Yeah, a few chapters ago.
Yeah, we had Madame Pomfrey called Poppy.
By McGonagall, right. And I'm like, if anybody is going to be like a real stickler for formality, it would be McGonagall, I think.
But there's also, there might be a handful of students that you're like more relaxed around, like, oh, I'm just with Harry. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah. And there is the complication of that relationship as McGonagall was not speaking to another teacher, another professor. She was speaking to Madame Pomfrey. So there might be nuance in that Madame Pomfrey is not like faculty. She's staff in a way.
And it could also just be the relationship or Madame Pomfrey's feelings about that.
Right. So I'm not going to read too much into this, but I did think it was interesting that Snape called Lupin, Lupin. I would have thought it was interesting if he called Lupin by his first name as well, though.
Which we still don't know.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, it was just something that I picked up on that I'm like, that could mean something there. It seems like a more formal way of referring to a fellow teacher, but he doesn't say Professor Lupin or anything. Like my classroom partner, I try to call him by his last name when we're in front of students, which is often. So I'll say Mr. last name. I would never just say last name.
Yeah.
You know, like if this situation was happening with McGonagall and Snape acted in the same way, which I don't think he would have, but if he just said McGonagall, I thought that would have been weird, right?
On the other hand, we've been calling him Snape, and that's his last name.
And the kids call Snape Snape.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we do it.
So I'm honestly, I don't know the situation. Like, I don't know what the formality is in England either.
Sure. And that's a nuance to it, too, because we also have to consider that, like, generally speaking, the professors call the students by their last names, where that doesn't really happen here in America.
It can.
It can, but for the most part, it does not. But I would say for the most part here, the teachers call their students by their last names, except Lupin. He calls them by their first names.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a naming thing that I think is an interesting way of looking at the relationships between characters. So if we go back to what I said about Lupin being very kind with his students and his language, calling them by their first names is in some way a way of building that relationship to be more personal, to be more intimate, but I think also a way of kind of getting on their level and being like, we're all friends here. Like, I'm going to call you by your first name in the way that some teachers invite students to call them by their first names. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was something I was thinking about with this chapter. So Lupin takes them into the faculty room to fight a Boggart, which is currently in the wardrobe. He says that it showed up like a day or two before, and he asked that nobody deal with it so that he could use it for a lesson for his third years.
Yes, apparently they pop up all the time. Mm-hmm. So I assume the next teacher in there would have just dealt with it.
Right.
I doubt that's something you leave for Filch.
Yeah. Oh, God. So Boggarts, as Hermione tells us, are shapeshifters. They take on the form of whatever scares most the person it encounters. It takes on the form of your worst fear. Mm-hmm. And it goes through some notable transformations for the chapter. And we'll talk about each of them in detail. I do want to read some interesting details about Boggarts that I found on the Harry Potter lexicon. Creatures called Boggart or Bug, Bugbear, Bogey, Bogeyman, or Bogle appear in English folklore, and most of them are like poltergeists. Rowling was likely inspired by the Clutterbumph of the novel Manx Mouse, the mouse who knew no fear. The Clutterbumpf is a shapeshifter that takes on the form of what a nearby person fears most, and Rowling confirmed that she is a fan of the novel.
Okay.
So that fits. The lexicon speculates that many Muggle children may have encountered Boggarts as the monster under the bed, though this is not explicitly stated in the books anywhere.
Yeah, it would make perfect sense.
Yes.
They're in your closet, they're under the bed.
Yeah. And the capitalization of Boggart varies between different editions of the books. In some, it's capitalized every time. In some, it's lowercase all the time. A weird thing.
That is weird. Yeah. Our version definitely has it capitalized.
Yeah. And then my last note, too, is that in a interview with Scholastic.com from the year 2000, Rowling stated that her Boggart would be Aragog. And she related that to Ron because she's afraid of spiders. She was also asked, it's more of like a Q&A than an interview, the one that I'm referring to, if she could change the world, what would she do? And she said she would make everyone more tolerant, which is...
well, you know, if she could change herself...
If only she could look inward. If only there was a device.
I mean, that everyone would include her. So
yeah, I guess. Maybe she's like, I wish I could make myself less of a hateful creature. Right. So Lupin explains the Boggart, and he explains the spell that is used to get rid of the Boggart, which we're going to save for spell of the week. But basically, you want to turn the Boggart into something funny, because that removes its power. And Lupin also says that Boggarts are best dealt with in groups because it confuses the Boggart.
Yes, it's not going to be able to cling on to one person's fear directly. It won't be sure who to change into. You can see how they deal with it in the chapter. Mm-hmm. They bring Neville forward first. They send students forward to get their own chance to address it. But Lupin does talk about how if you have two people right next to each other, that Boggart might decide to try and do both things.
Right.
He describes someone afraid of a specific kind of slug and someone afraid of a headless horseman might end up with just a headless slug, which mm-hmm. is not scary in any way.
Right, right. And this will become important for something that happens in the future, too, about dealing with Boggarts and groups being the best way to do it. But we'll get to that in, say, two books.
That's a tough one.
You don't remember?
No, I that's a tough scene.
Yeah. Oh, my God. For me, especially. So the Boggart transforms for several students. Lupin calls up just about everyone to have a shot at the Boggart. For Neville, it turns into Professor Snape.
And Lupin does this very well. He takes precautions. He does some things we would have liked to have seen last chapter. Mm-hmm. He gives clear directions. The students practice. Mm-hmm. And then he releases the monster on the students.
Yes.
So they practice the incantation and he explains exactly what they have to do. They have time to mentally prepare they have to think of what that thing is actually going to turn into.
And prepare a like silly transformation for it.
Yes. How can you make that seem ridiculous?
Yeah. And he takes Neville through it first, which I think is another interesting sign that Lupin knows his students and is a compassionate teacher, because he may have picked Neville as this kid is going to get really freaked out and might get stuck in his fear. So I'm going to help him along the way. I'm going to scaffold him toward the desired result.
I would also say that this was almost entirely in response to Snape trying to put Neville down.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
That was Snape was clearly giving Neville a hard time earlier mm-hmm. and just tried to undermine him during Lupin's class. So he is going to make sure Neville succeeds where Snape couldn't make him succeed.
Right. To kind of build Neville's confidence up a little. The thought, though, that a student's greatest fear is their teacher, because Neville sees Snape come out of the Boggart becomes Professor Snape, is so upsetting. That Neville's greatest fear is this person that he has to see on a regular basis who torments him at school and who is a teacher.
Yeah. And from what we've seen, it's understandable.
Yes, it's a totally valid fear, but it's so upsetting to me to think of this poor kid having to deal with this.
But what a treat for him and all the other students to get to see Neville turn Snape into Snape dressed like his grandma.
Yes, Lupin helps him along that way. He asks Neville, what does your grandmother wear? And Neville replies that every day she wears a hat with a stuffed vulture on top, which is a look.
Which we find out is a moth-eaten vulture hat. So, like, this is an ancient hat that's not in good condition anymore, but she cannot leave the house without it.
She has that Lupin syndrome of everything that she touches just becomes old, like all her possessions.
Lupin's got shabby stuff. Neville's grandma has moth-eaten things.
Yeah. A vulture, a stuffed vulture on a hat that she wears every day.
Usually a long green dress, sometimes fox fur scarf. And Professor Lupin's like, give him a bag too.
Yeah.
Does she have a handbag?
Complete the outfit.
Yeah. A big red handbag. And Lupin is excited about this. I'm sure he is enjoying this just as much as the students.
Yes.
For so many reasons.
And we see the other students' fears. I didn't know what each of them transforms into, but I think it's interesting to kind of build out what the other students are afraid of. Parvati is next up, and her fear is a mummy. In the movie, interestingly, this is switched to a cobra.
Yes.
For unknown reasons. Seamus, his is a banshee. Dean is a crawling severed hand. Ron's is a spider.
Only a spider, but of course, Aragog, a giant spider.
Yeah. I mean, what's worse than a spider? A giant spider.
Which scares a lot of the other class, too.
Yeah.
There were some kids who were fully prepared to fight the Spogart and suddenly got a new fear. Good thing, Ron went last.
No, he doesn't go last because Lupin jumps in.
Well, yes. He's the last student, though.
Okay. Lupin jumps in and his is a silvery white orb.
Which Lavender Brown thinks is a crystal ball.
Yeah. She's still riding that high of divination class.
Yeah. He's afraid of omens as well.
Yes. And I want to ask, what would your Boggart be?
I honestly have no idea.
Okay.
Like, I would be curious to run into a real one to, like, answer that question.
Okay.
You know, I had a lot of fears as a child, but I don't think I have anything that, like, sticks with me. I don't have any, like, major phobias. I used to be scared of spiders, and now we have a ton of spiders in our apartment that I just let hang out.
That's called exposure therapy.
Yep. Which is kind of what's happening in this chapter as well.
Like, yeah, I mean, like, the overarching theme of Lupin's lesson is face your fears.
Yes.
Turn them into something funny. By contrast, in thinking about what my Boggart would be, there are too many things for me to choose from. And it's hard too, because a lot of my fears, I'm not sure how that would take on like corporeal form. Like, one of my greatest fears is being trapped under ice, like drowning under ice. And I don't really know what a Boggart would shapeshift into, because
just like a falling sheet of ice.
But like, you know, I'm not afraid of ice. I'm afraid of being stuck under ice.
Mm-hmm.
In closed spaces.
Okay.
That, yeah.
The Boggart will turn into the wardrobe that it just came out of and swallow you up.
Airplanes.
That's not going to fit in the classroom.
Yeah.
And a tiny one's not really the same thing.
Any of the creatures from the various horror movies I've seen throughout my life. Joe and I just started watching The X-Files and we had to skip an episode because I was so scarred by it as a child.
If you're curious, season 1, episode 3.
Yes, it's called Squeeze.
Menacing.
It really impacted me as a child. Like people that I love dying would definitely be one of them. Old age. I'm curious about what the Boggart would turn into, not because I'm not sure what I'm afraid of. I'm not sure what I'm most afraid of.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
I mean,
I'm not great with heights, but I can like
none of
I can
those
get
are
up
reasonable.
There.
Are you afraid of heights? I've never. You're
I'm
so
afraid
tall.
Of falling from heights.
Okay.
You know, I wouldn't be afraid to go skydiving, or like I've gone ziplining and.
You could put skydiving on my list of possible Boggarts.
How would that work?
I don't know.
There's that plane ride again.
Oh, God. Yeah. You have to be in a plane and then you have to jump out of the plane.
Then you're not in the plane anymore. It's perfectly fine.
Ugh. Oh, there's so many. So I
and I'm sure you wouldn't even enjoy, like, you'd be strapped to a person, which is probably
oh my
a
God.
Fear of yours.
Oh, my God. Close physical contact? Are you kidding me? Being restrained?
Yep.
the parachute failing. Oh my gosh, there are so many possible vectors for me there in terms of fear. So I don't know, but I would love for our listeners to reply to our tweet or email us or whatever and tell us what their Bogart would be.
Tell me your deepest fears. Tell us your greatest fear, and we're just going to email you back gifs of them.
Got to churn that content mill. And so back to the chapter.
On that note.
Lupin is the last one to go because he steps in before Harry and Hermione have a chance to go. We don't get full details about like every single person that goes and what their fear is, but the implication is kind of that Harry and Hermione were the only two that did not get to face it.
Yes, that is true. Lupin steps in front when it gets to Harry. It does not go in front of Hermione. I think it was right. It got in front of Harry. Lupin stepped in to stop it. And then he lets Neville finish it off, mm-hmm. which is why I did say this was a very Neville centric one. It starts with Neville getting picked on.
As Neville-centric of a chapter as I think we can hope to get.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Harry asks asks Lupin directly why he did not get a chance in front of the Bogart. And Lupin says, you and Hermione didn't because you answered my questions in the beginning of class.
Well, he asked why he still got points.
Okay. Yeah.
But he will probably be asking, why didn't I get to?
Yeah, and that's kind of where the chapter leaves us off. Harry wondering why Lupin deliberately stopped him from facing the Bogart. And he wonders if Lupin thinks that he's weak after what happened on the train. He wonders if Lupin thinks he's going to pass out or just not be able to handle things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, that that's an interesting point in the relationship of student to teacher. Of course, there's a larger relationship between Harry and Lupin that we don't know about yet. But even at this point, Harry is conscientious of what his teacher thinks of him. He doesn't want his teacher to think of him as weak, which to me says that Harry respects him as a teacher and as a person.
It also seems just like a pride thing of like, nobody can think I'm weak. I'm not going to pass out again.
That's a possibility, too. And that's not quite where the chapter ends, because I have one last problem to talk about.
Are you going to complain about what Ron thinks Hermione's Bogart is?
What does Ron think Hermione's Bogart would have been?
A piece of homework that only got a 9 out of 10.
Yes. Even if this was Hermione's Bogart, and now I'm confused about how I've been saying it, I don't think that this is a laughable fear. We know that Hermione is a perfectionist. If her deepest fear is like losing that small amount of points, that's really troubling. Like that to me is... that Hermione takes school very seriously, like to a fault. I think that's as valid of a fear as spiders.
Do you think she would have more fears like you of like, these are kind of intangible? Like her greatest fear might be being expelled.
Killed or worse, expelled. I don't know. Maybe that is what it is, that all of Hermione's fears are so intangible that like the one that can be put into something for a Bogart to shapeshift into would be that. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe, but also this was definitely just the joke of Ron's.
It was a joke, but like, first of all, it's mean. It's a mean joke. Hermione and Ron are friends, but
friends can rib on each other.
Yeah, but he like sniggers this to Harry. He doesn't.
No, he doesn't.
I didn't get the impression that this was said aloud to Hermione.
What would it have been for you?
Okay. I took this as kind of a snide comment that he made behind Hermione's back.
No, he's done insulting her behind her back.
He'll do it to her face.
Right to her face. They're friends now.
Yeah, it upsets me. Like, I have students that genuinely get upset when they get, like, a 90 on a test.
Yeah.
And I'm like, a 90 is great. You're 12.
Well, it's all about expectations that are put on you.
Yeah.
That you give yourself.
That Hermione has such high expectations for herself, whether that comes just from her innate desire to do well or if it comes from somewhere else, we don't know, but... That would be her, like, that's upsetting to me. That's not something to laugh about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like that.
Okay.
I had a very mixed reaction to this chapter. I think that the scene of, like, Lupin having them go around and deal with the Bogart is good. I liked the way that Lupin approached his classroom, but there was a lot of other stuff in this chapter that really ticked me off.
Yeah, that's fair. I thought it was a nice chapter about Neville that sprinkled in some stuff, which we... kind of breezed over of Sirius Black is close to the castle.
Jeez, we forgot about that. Oh, boy, we got to mention that.
That's what I just did.
Yeah.
Dean brings it up during potions class. Seamus brings it up during potions class. And Malfoy starts kind of egging on Harry of like, you should go after him. you should go after him. I would want revenge.
Yeah.
So we get a little further hint of what Arthur was saying. Don't go after him no matter what you find out.
Yeah. It kind of continues that mystery of what exactly is the connection between Sirius Black and Harry. Because there clearly is one that people know about and just are not telling Harry. And yeah. And I think we can assume that Draco's father told him something.
Draco's father was very happy to tell him. I'm sure that Draco knew before Sirius Black escaped.
Yeah. So we've got, I think, two kind of lingering questions after this, three lingering questions after this chapter. What's going on with Hermione? What's going on with Harry and Sirius Black? And why did Lupin stop Harry from fighting the Boggart?
And what's going to happen with Hagrid?
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that one. That
That's how we started.
Too. Yeah. Most important mystery of the book.
Will Draco ever have a fully working arm again? We'll just never know.
Not if Harry and Ron have anything to say about it. So
Ron does threaten, I'll give you a real injury.
Yeah. So I think that that is a good time for us to do Spell of the Week.
So our Spell of the Week is, as we mentioned earlier, ridiculous.
Is that how you say it?
I'm currently looking for pronunciation, but the Harry Potter lexicon does not have it.
If I would say ridiculous.
No, it's definitely ridiculous.
Okay, if you say so. Actually, thinking about the movie, yeah, I think they do say ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Okay.
I'm holding up a phone 7 feet away as if you can read it.
I know what it is. It's the Harry Potter Wiki. You know I have my feelings about the Harry Potter Wiki.
But that was the only one with pronunciation on it.
Well, do they have a source? But go on, tell us about ridiculous, ridiculous.
So as we mentioned earlier, the spell is used to help you destroy a Boggart, like actually destroy it.
Mm-hmm. Send it to the Shadow Realm.
Send it to the Shadow Realm.
Yep.
You hold your wand at shoulder height while visualizing a way to turn your greatest fear into something you can laugh at.
Yes.
It is more of a mental spell than anything else. It's not going to work if your will is not strong enough. And the stronger the caster, the easier it is to destroy a Boggart with it. If you are a weaker caster, it will take longer. It is best to have more than one person with you. That will help distract the Boggart, make it more confused and easily destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And again, laughing at it is the best way to fully destroy the Boggart.
That would probably be another one of my Boggart transformations, people laughing at me, like humiliation.
How do you laugh at...
Like if the Boggart laughed at me.
Yeah, but if laughing would be one of your fears and laughing also hurts the Boggart, what happens?
It's like when you try to put two magnets together when they're the opposite or when they're the same.
The same polarity.
Yeah.
Just bounce off each other.
Yeah.
Okay. If you had stopped it when you try and put two magnets together, I'm like, that doesn't mean anything.
But you understand I'm saying. I don't know what the words are. I don't know magnet science.
It was just like just a long enough pause. I was like, what about if you put two magnets together? What happens then?
Okay, so what? Tell me more about ridiculous.
There is not very much to tell.
Okay.
We're going to see Boggarts again later.
Mm-hmm.
This spell will have to be used in later books, but we'll also get to talk about more about how Boggarts work in a couple chapters in a way that doesn't use the spell, which I'm very curious to get into.
Yeah. Shrinking solutions, babe.
Yes.
That's going to be my response now. Whenever something doesn't make sense in the magical universe, it's shrinking solutions.
I think shrinking solutions made perfect sense you went to the video game and about sheep.
Let's not relitigate shrinking solutions. Let's instead talk about emails. We have an email this week to read and talk about. This email is from my sibling, Den. So thank you, Den, for writing in again. Den writes, "Hi, Cassie and Joe. Your discussion in episode 3.5 about the Dementors on the train, particularly when you connect the characters' responses as being amplified by their past trauma, got me thinking about trauma as a theme throughout the series. Neville, Ginny, and Harry all have the strongest reactions to the Dementors, and they are all the characters who have had past traumatic experiences they are still processing or haven't been given the space to process. Symbols relating to trauma crop up in every book. In book one, the Mirror of Erised is used by Harry to deny the reality of his parents' death. His sudden entry into the magical world and his status in it being directly linked to their loss makes this a particularly powerful symbol. Every instance where a wizard or witch or classmate asks about his scar or whispers about him, he must think of his parents at the time of their death, and the mirror is a definite solace from that, if an unhealthy one. In book two, Ginny becomes an unwilling participant in Voldemort's deeds and is really emotionally and mentally manipulated by the diary. I think there's also something to be said for Harry being stigmatized for his parcel tongue and the shame he feels because of that, especially as that ability is a result of Voldemort's attempt on his life. There's not a lot of focus on the long-term impacts of these events, but you can see with Ginny in this chapter how her experience still affects her. In Chapter 5 in Book 3, the Dementors and the Invisible Horses are also introduced. The horses relate to how perception of the world can be changed by instances of trauma, and the Dementors obviously amplify and trigger a relieving of past experiences in the characters. There are consistent symbols throughout the series that challenge Harry and the reader to consider how trauma affects their desires, memories, and reactions and perception of the world. Curious to hear more about how themes of trauma, death, and grief are carried throughout the series. From Dennis.
Den always has
very
so thoughtful ones.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I really appreciate that. I think it's a conversation that we've had, especially in like that Mirror of Erised chapter.
Yes.
and the chapter 5 that they're referring to and responding to. But yeah, it's kind of this subtext, I think, that runs through a lot of the books and a lot of the chapters and a lot of the characters' experiences that often isn't acknowledged or commented on in the way that we kind of want it to, which was our frustration with that chapter. With the Dementors, that they never really acknowledged Ginny and Neville's trauma.
Yeah, it's just, you know, put there and then left.
Yeah, yeah. And part of that is that we don't know the source of Neville's trauma at this point and sort of the puzzle piece approach that Rowling takes to these books. But I do think trauma is really key to this series, and especially rereading it now as an adult, that's something that very much struck me about the first book, how much of it is Harry reliving that trauma of his parents' death.
Yes, and I know we talked about this when we did talk about Mirror of Erised, but a lot of that was inspired by J.K. Rowling's trauma. Mm-hmm. Of her mother dying.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I think that in a way they are very compassionate books in that they do acknowledge the way that trauma shapes your experiences as a person and your perceptions of the world. But I also think that they're flawed in that they don't quite consider a lot of the traumas that everyone endures, and they don't really give weight to some of the more minor characters' traumas like Ginny.
Yes. And I did like that Den brought up that the trauma in the second book is it's Ginny's trauma that
yeah.
we're focusing on.
Right.
And then it's more or less swept under the rug in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I would argue that there are other traumas there, too, of like Hermione being called a mudblood could be a traumatic experience. But I guess on the other hand, she doesn't feel the full trauma of it because she doesn't understand that kind of nuance within the world and that meaning of that word within the world.
Which is interesting to think about, because anyone who you would be calling a mudblood doesn't have that experience to know it's a bad word.
Yes. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, but I like that observation. Thank you, Den.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
We will certainly continue to explore this.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think even with the Bogart, this can open up a conversation as we learn more about why Harry was not put in front of the Bogart, that the Bogart potentially could take on the shape of some of those deep traumatic experiences. Like if you put 12-year-old Ginny Weasley in front of a Bogart, she might see that diary. She might see Tom Riddle.
Yeah, or the Basilisk.
Yeah. I mean, Ginny doesn't really have like direct contact with the Basilisk.
She releases the Basilisk.
Yeah, but does she remember?
I have no idea.
But then does the Bogart look into your lived memories, like the things that you remember?
Repressed traumas are still traumas.
Huh. Yeah. But again, it's something that's not really discussed. Like, their fears are very surface level things, at least the characters that we see.
Yes.
Like a mummy, a spider.
I mean, there are potential traumas that led to those fears.
Right.
We like, do know Ron's experience fear.
Certainly was a traumatic event in his life. But yeah, so I guess the spider taking on that shape is a representative of a representation of that more traumatic, that abstract traumatic experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. It's definitely something that runs throughout the books and that we'll continue to talk about. So thank you, Deb.
Yes, thank you.
If you would like to send us a very thoughtful email, or it doesn't have to be thoughtful, it can just be an email, you can send that to owlpost, O-W-L-P-O-S-T, at podtrificustotalis.com. I believe it's working now. It will certainly be working by the time this episode goes up, but that has been my frustration. Yes, so please do send us an email with your thoughts, comments, corrections, whatever you got. I do want to give a shout out to Angie, one of our listeners, who wrote a very kind review on Podchaser. It brightened my day. I'm not going to read the review aloud because Joe gets upset when I try to do that, but it very much warmed my heart to read that. So thank you, Angie.
Thank you.
And if you would like to warm my heart, you can also leave us a review on Podchaser, Apple Podcasts, wherever you consume podcasts. And that would be super swell of you. You can subscribe to our show anywhere you find podcasts. You probably already found this podcast on a place where you can subscribe to podcasts. So, you know, ring that bell, hit that button, and check out our website, podtrificustotalis.com, where you can find detailed show notes, links out to the interviews and other sources that we discuss. And you can listen to all our episodes there. And you can join us next week for Chapter 8 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Flight of the Fat Lady.